It's the fourth and final hour of the morning show presented by St. Mary's Medical Group. David Johnston, Logan Booker along with you. Another hour to go with former Georgia head coach Jim Donnan here in the studio with us. Little Dooley's Junkyard Dogs. Game coming up Saturday will be the first ever at Dooley Field. So I have all that stuff going on this weekend. So coach, as we said earlier, looking ahead versus looking back. So we didn't we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking on the about the Georgia Vandy game, but I still feel like we gave it enough time. Does that make any
sense? Exactly. And everybody,
it's been an extra day.
And everybody's got an idea about it, but the overall view to me would be that this is a very talented team with a veteran quarterback that has a good kicking game and a young defense, but a talented defense that's going to be able to pressure the quarterback, can tackle in space, and have a really good kicking game. And the schedule sets up to really build some momentum here the next couple weeks, getting ready for Notre Dame, even though, Kirby wouldn't say that. And I'm not putting words, taking words out of his mouth or putting them in. But, you know, you can get a lot of good young players, a lot of good work here in practice, getting ready for the game and hopefully get them in the game against Murray and against Arkansas State, who had a tough loss at home, lost their coach the last couple weeks, too, with his wife passing away. And I'm sure he's going to start coaching again here relatively soon, but they had a tough loss to SMU 37-30 at home, but they got some firepower on offense, so we'll have to be ready. But the one thing we do is we practice hard. I mean, our kids really get challenged in practice, and we're going to get some guys back that have been hurt. Salyer didn't get to make the trip, but I heard that he's going to be okay. They said he practiced yesterday, and so we'll get some more depth in O-line to help us out a little bit.
One thing, Coach, we have not mentioned much about this morning, if at all, was Zamir White making his big debut in Nashville. The Zeus chants rained down from the crowd, but the five carries that he had, the long of 23, I know it's an itty-bitty sample size, but it's enough to get me very excited for the future of that kid. What were your thoughts on Zamir?
Well, the first thing is just so happy that he was able to rehab and he's out there, you know, when you know everything he's been through to get where he is, and the real tribute to himself and to Ron Corson and the medical staff, the way they've rehabbed him. It's a very similar situation to Chubb and the fact that he had an injury and has come back, I think he'll just continue to improve and hopefully have a good year and then a great year next year. Maybe could have a great year this year, but he's in the pecking order behind some really good backs. I mean, you know, Swift's among the best in the country, and we know what Harrion can do. And then Cook, to me, is just really explosive, a home run hitter type. So we got a good situation, but I'm happy to see Zeus in there, and, that's – good example for anybody, whether you're junior high school, college, pro. When you're running in the open field, you got to rock the baby. You can't expose that ball from behind because they're going to kick it out. So you get those two pressure points between your index and your middle finger, and you put the ball right in the cradle of your elbow, and you take it. If everybody at home would just take that ball and scrape your rib cage with it, you're rocking the baby when you run with that rock.
You know, it's funny.
I'm still
I
coaching
think of that, and then. Any game I'm watching, when either a receiver gets the ball in the open field and there's guys coming behind him, or a running back breaks away, or a kick return, I always think Coach is saying, rock the baby, rock the baby.
You got to scrape that rib cage, because if you expose it out, you never know who's behind you, and it's easy to knock it. So I know Coach Dale McGee, they work on it hard, rocking the baby, and he'll work on it and understand that, you know, he's not playing in high school and not just going to outrun everybody. He's going to have to protect the ball. Just like we say, 15-yard penalty, nobody's worth the 15-yard penalty. Nobody's worth the fumble either.
Zamir ended up with 5 carries for 51 yards. Harrion had 12 carries for 65. Swift had 16 for 149. The Dogs averaged 8 yards a carry.
Seriously, though, you were at the game. When Swift touches the ball, everybody just stands up.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy is just – and I was happy, too, to see some guys like Demetrius Robertson. You see the potential he has, the speed on the perimeter that he and Tyler Simmons give us. It's just exciting because – you know, in today's game, it's hard to take the ball. If you just look at all of the different games that we watched over the last 5 days, it's hard to be manufacture a drive for 75, 80 yards without some big plays, because you're going to stop yourself with penalties. Other teams going to make some plays. You might get a deflected pass when the guy's wide open and the guy holds his hand up. And we see this more and more with defensive nowadays. If you can't rush the passer, you get negated at the line of scrimmage. They just tell them to stand there and jump up and try to knock the ball down, because you're ineffective as a pass rusher. You might as well try to knock it down. So you're seeing it a lot of more passes like J.J. Watt does in the pros. You're just seeing a lot more of those deflections because people see the double team and they don't try to fight it. They just stand there and try to negate the vertical passing game.
It's an excellent point there, too. And the deflections made me think of Jordan Davis and the field goal almost.
Yeah, Jordan, boy, I tell you what, he's I watched yesterday his interview on the online, and he's a very articulate young man and very bright, energetic, good smile. You know, you like to see kind of all these kids, how they react, and Kirby does a good job preparing them for the press, but he just seems really so proud to be on the Georgia team. And I never will forget the first time I ever met him. He was over here to watch a practice during the bowl practice that we had. And he was over there on the side. And the guy came up to me and introduced himself, said, "I'm Jordan Davis from Charlotte, North Carolina." I said, "Hey, I know who you are, Jordan. There's not many 6'3". But I said, "It's nice of you to say hello." And he said, and then I told him I used to coach here, and we started talking. I said, "Hey, I used to live in Charlotte. You know, my parents did, but I never did because I was in college." But and we talked about his high school. But he was very forthcoming, and you like a guy like that, that you know, and then instead of sitting over on the side and just everybody thinking, you know, him thinking he just he's the greatest. But he was really wanting to talk about playing in college and all that. But he really did. He does. These guys, you got to remember, they're just young kids. I mean, he's a man, but he's just a 19-year-old kid, really.
I had a chance to talk with him yesterday at the media day, and you can find some of that video on our Twitter account, 960TheRef, at 960TheRef. But you're right, just his composure, the way he talks, the way he speaks, he's happy to be here. You can tell that he has developed into one heck of a player since joining the college ranks, and I think he's very appreciative and thankful for that. But that being said, also, I've been around the program just for a handful of years, and I've seen some pretty big defensive linemen. But when he walks out into that media room,
massive,
he's one of those guys that makes you sort of jaw drop a little bit, thinking like, my God, and to think that he's only a true sophomore, it's only going to get bigger.
And he's a great example of what Kirby preaches. If you do what you're told, you know, going into last year, Jordan Davis' chances of playing were not really big. You know, I mean, he, a little bit heavy. He had to work. He worked on a scout team. He really responded to Coach Scott's coaching. They really prodded him along. And then, you know, I remember Kirby had that microphone out there talking about, you know, going to special teams and all. And he'd be, "Hey, Jordan Davis, you need to pick it up. You need to run." This was 2 years ago. And that guy has worked off the field with Coach Sinclair, redefined his body. He's in pretty good shape. And he really I'm just so happy for him, because he really has been a team player. But this is a guy that takes up a lot of space now, and it really helps your defense. He's an epitome of what you want as a nose guard.
Well, you know, he's one of these, and since Kirby doesn't let the freshmen talk, you know, no one's really heard him before. He said something after the game Saturday that I thought was interesting, and I feel like I've heard all the, you know, there's nothing you could say that you haven't heard before. But he said, I think we got better tonight. And he said, and I hope Vanderbilt got better tonight. I thought that was actually pretty interesting that he said that.
Is that what he said?
Yeah. And it's like, well, you know what? It only benefits Georgia if Vanderbilt does get better,
I'm
I guess.
I'm starting to love the kid. I already do, but it's just becoming a favorite player.
The one thing I'd say about Vanderbilt, you know what the biggest room in the world is?
The room for improvement. Yes.
They got a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, but probably not. There's probably other SEC teams that have bigger rooms than them.
Their O-line is Jed Clampett.
Yeah.
They had some no-hitters going out. We got some quick guys on defense and all, but these guys – and then they had a lot of penalties, too.
They did.
You know, they were – Their center was nervous, but I would be too. I got Jordan Davis and Clark and those guys right in front of me. But I thought the biggest mismatch of the night, even though our O-line was moving their D-line, they made some plays, and particularly on short yardage. But their O-line trying to block us, it was not good.
No, and I was looking at their numbers just when they were passing, and they attempted 32 passes gained 109 yards.
That's what they threw.
Exactly.
They probably called about 45.
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't know how many times
did a quarterback run? How many runs did that Riley Neal have?
Neal had 10 for minus 2.
Well, so he ran a couple of times and made yards, but he had a lot of and he had a lot of throwaways too. We were all over him. So
it was very impressive.
And we're going to play against a lot better offensive teams than Vanderbilt, but I thought our defense was well organized. We're where they're supposed to be. Got a lot of reps in as far as playing some a lot of different guys, and we had a couple that didn't get to play that probably could have and were hurt. I guess they were hurt, Herring and Rochester, Rochester coming off a knee. So you're not going to use the guy unless you really need to there in a situation like that.
Let's see. We've got some emails. Our man Tony's checking in. He's got a couple
What's
of
up,
questions.
What's up, Tony?
And bullet points. I like that.
He uses
bullet points. He knows I'm a fan of bullet points. I like bullet points. And I'm not being sarcastic.
No, they
I
make everything
like
very easy
they
to
make
read.
It look very yes. efficient.
Here's the thing about bullet points. If you're going to put bullet points for your team, you need to put them in different colors. And that and red is the one that really sticks out.
There
so when you put things on the board, if you're a manager or something and put bullet points, use different color-coded pens for that.
But if you're at Tech, red's not allowed, according to Coach
Collins.
Well,
I don't care about Tech. But, the situation is such. Use those different color-coded pens for your bullet points, Tony.
All right, here's the question. Here's the first question. When a team starts out like Tennessee did on Saturday, are other coaches of other teams going to start re-recruiting players that have committed to that struggling
exactly.
team?
You saw South Carolina. I had a guy drop out yesterday, 2 days ago, that was committed for 2021 or 20, not this year, but next year, a junior in Georgia, a four-star guy. So I would think, particularly those guys in Marietta that are really up in the air for, like Gilbert is between Georgia and Alabama and Tennessee. Just so happens, hey, did you see the Tennessee score? He might have been at the game, but, I mean, that's for sure.
Yikes.
That's for sure that's going to hurt them a little bit. But at the same time, sometimes it helps you because you say, look, it's obvious we need you. You know what I mean? Hey, you can play here right away.
Let me rephrase this question. Sorry, Tony, I'm changing it up here a little bit.
You going to take the bullet points out?
No, the bullet points are still there. How often do you see guys that are better on game day during practice, and you got to know that? And then the other extreme, practice All-American guys versus game day guys, or is that more of a myth?
More times than not, a guy's usually going to play pretty much like he does in practice. But sometimes the guys just have a hard time getting the psyche in practice, and it's hard to motivate them. And then they get in the game, and they just get. They're just so relaxed that they make plays that they don't make in practice. And for us, some of the teams we play against are not near as good as what we're going against in practice. So they have a chance to be, maybe instead of going against a number one corner and trying to beat him, now you're going against the number three corner for the other team. So that happens too, the guys you're going against. But I would say usually there's not a guys that turn into Tarzan on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I that's what I'd always
which
thought,
which I said, hey, look like Tarzan, play like Jane.
Yes, exactly. All right, Strap Dog.
Strapper.
He's are you concerned that we didn't cover? And then he says.
We covered.
We did cover, Strap.
I'm sorry, my bad. Almost didn't cover.
Almost.
He said almost didn't cover. Then he says, we didn't play well down the stretch. And then he says, I've been all over the 50 states. When did Murray get a state? So there you go, Strappa.
Yeah, I'm not.
We kind of talked a little bit about the game
itself. I'm not concerned about the score.
The final score.
It's just the fact that we weren't sloppy with the ball, we weren't sloppy with penalties on the execution side, offsides, lining up offsides, illegal procedure, illegal substitution, stuff like that. I was disappointed in the dumb mistakes of hitting guys out of bounds. But as far as the cover part, that doesn't really enter my mind. But we didn't play nearly as consistent after the first quarter as we needed to. And usually you see that when you jump out ahead 21-0. You saw at Ohio State, jumped out ahead 28-0, yeah. And then went like two quarters without hardly doing anything. So it's just a case of being ready for the game was impressive compared to what you saw some other teams that really took them a long time. Like the antithesis of that is Duke did everything they could to keep Alabama at bay there for a long time, and then Alabama took over, whereas we took over the game right from the start.
Our man Adam Wynn. Adam, good morning, sir.
42 Cobras.
42 Cobras.
What is it?
His Twitter is 42 Cobras, whatever that is. He says, is there anything Murray State can do specifically that will be a good test for Georgia or some aspect of their game that can be good prep?
Well, the one thing that you work on that I used to tell our team, when you're playing a team that you're supposed to beat, the difference in making sure they can't do anything to you is the way you prepare. If you prepare like you're supposed to and know your assignments and work hard, upsets usually don't happen. The ones that happens when you flip-flop around all week and then you're really not sure going into the game, some of their formations and stuff like that, and you don't prepare mentally, and then they catch you off guard and get some easy scores. But that's not going to happen ever at Georgia, because we practice like the Russians were in St. Louis. If the Russians were in St. Louis, that would be our last practice. You know what I mean? So we practice hard. And I think Murray State is going to be greatly outnumbered. And it's just going to be a case of taking advantage of playing our game and hopefully get some of these younger guys in there and get some reps and get a chance to look at Stetson Bennett and hopefully see how he can do too.
By the way, as a coach who's been on both sides of this, coaching a big boy versus a smaller team and then being the head coach of a smaller team against a big boy, a lot of people don't think that FBS teams should play FCS teams. But what are your thoughts on that?
I think if the school is in the state and the school has a representative team, I'm all for that, because it really generates money for you within the state. The people got to realize that all these other sports are counting on the University of Georgia football to generate money. So when you bring in a team like Murray State, if we pay them, I don't know. They said they paid Georgia State $950. I don't know what we paying them, but
probably $500 to $600.
Whatever we're paying them, but we're generating the money to pay for the volleyball, for the gymnastics, for all the. Every time we play a home game, that helps our budget. You know what I mean? So I think it's and the fact that you can get that much money from Murray State, that helps them the rest of the year for all their sports. You know what I'm saying? So I'm for playing some of these games, particularly if it's an in-state school. But it's just hard to rationalize playing one of those games too, looking at it the other way, because we got enough games that we can play on non-power teams like Arkansas State and people like that. But
$550, by the way.
But our schedule sets up over the next few years. We're starting to pick it up on these non-conference games.
Do you think, though, it's Georgia's responsibility to fund fund other schools' programs? The way I see it, though,
not in a way.
Because some people say, it helps.
If you got a game, it's available and it's all there's out there, maybe so. But our first responsibility is to fund our own programs. You know what I mean? Even though people are saying, hey, well, we get this money from the SEC, but, we continue to build new facilities, which we need. We're way behind in facilities as far as what the players use. This new building is going to really be state of the art, mm-hmm. and we need that, for meeting rooms and weight rooms and all that. But when I was at Marshall and we got to play team like NC State, I mean, it was a big deal for us. You know, our kids really wanted the challenge and all that. But at the same time, it's tough duty, though. You know, I mean,
I wasn't trying to challenge what you said, because I kind of feel like I'm the same. I don't know that I necessarily feel like Georgia or Alabama or Oklahoma, it's their responsibility to fund other schools' programs. But I will say this, it helps football in general if schools like Murray State can have football. Schools like that, that's where
we give them a chance to get scholarships,
exactly,
and have people
exactly.
play. I think the more guys that can play and be part of it, it's going to help society, because football helps you.
I agree.
It's a great indicator of competition, of what you're getting ready to go through the rest of your life. You know, you're going to have some success and some failures. You're going to get knocked down, but you got to get back up and having a good – but to have a program, you got to fund it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You got to be able to –
That's where I want to clarify what you were saying. So for a team to schedule an FCS team, now thinking about the state of Georgia, that'd be Kennesaw State, Mercer, Savannah State, other teams, you know, down in South Georgia. But the FBS schools – Georgia Southern, even Georgia State in this case, you would not be for Georgia scheduling those teams right now. Are you okay with that as well?
I don't really care. I mean, you know, I think, again, I'm more for the FCS teams mm-hmm. playing us in the state, because we don't need to be playing. We've already played Georgia Southern, and then, you know, Kennesaw and Georgia State are coming up, but I think our schedule's trending towards a little bit tougher because of the BCS. You know, you just got to get these wins to help you get in the playoffs.
I agree. I mean, I'm with Coach on all of that, too.
Do we have any FCS coming up here in the next couple of years?
Yeah, well, let's see. I don't know.
For Georgia's future schedule?
I think they're trying to get one for next year. Would that be right? Or is it 22? I'm terrible at remembering all the games.
2020, there is no. East Tennessee State was recently scheduled.
All right.
To
so
go along
next
with
year.
Louisiana Monroe.
And,
what
about in 2020? And we play Virginia 2020, don't we?
Next year,
2020.
Yeah.
Next year is East Tennessee State opening with Virginia. 2021 has San Jose State and UAB.
Well, those are both FBS.
Both FBS, correct.
So and then, don't have one yet for 21.
There's an opening.
By the way, on this show, Logan, it's San Jose.
San Jose.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Charleston
that.
Southern is 2021.
Oh, Charleston
what are
Southern.
They?
They're FCS.
Okay, and then 2023, there's still an opening for
well, Charleston Southern's playing South Carolina this week, right?
That's right. That's right.
2024, Tennessee Tech. And then Charlotte is – what conference are they?
They're
Conference USA.
Okay, so, yeah, that's it for now.
Now, Greg McGarrity's nephew, Sean McGarrity, he played for Charleston Southern.
Really?
Local.
Yeah,
so
I remember. Yeah, he did. That's
right.
Yeah.
Offensive lineman.
He's in radio now, isn't he?
Sean is?
Somebody, I think
– I haven't seen him since baseball season.
Yeah, I think he is. He's doing something with
well, good for him.
Yeah.
Son of Stu, nephew of Greg. Exactly. My man, Sean McGarrity. All right, we got to look at some games. We don't have the updated rankings, but I don't think much is going to change. So we'll just kind of go through some of the top games.
We don't see Oregon dropping out of the top 25 after that loss.
No. Don't think so. They were 11. They could switch them with Auburn, maybe, but that's about all I see happening in the rankings this week. We'll catch that when we come back. Got the coach here in the studio with us. Great questions. We do appreciate those. And we'll come back and look ahead to this week. It's 9:31.
9:36. Welcome back. It's the morning show, the Tuesday that feels like a Monday edition. Here on 960 The Ref, it is presented by St. Mary's Medical Group. And because it's Tuesday, I'm Logan, that's Dave, and we are joined by Coach Dunn. Doesn't get much better than that.
It doesn't get at all better.
No, it's the peak of our week. And to do it on the first day of the week is fantastic.
The only thing that's better, no offense, Logan, are Friday nights from 6 until 8 when we are on University Tired Automotive's Bulldog Friday night, and we have an element of the show that we kind of turn into the Feinbaum show, but I really think it's funny. And we have some classic callers, don't we, Coach?
Man, we had them. We were challenged last week, but we had a lot of good calls. But we had had a few that were had some little juice behind them.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
But
it
Stephen
great.
Was quick on the pulling them out. Right. But I thought you showed a lot of poise.
No, that's all good. It's fun. Hey, and we've got our first show on the road coming up Friday night. At the Blind Pig Tavern downtown.
Yeah, I like,
so looking forward to that.
I bet we have a lot of people down there. Just, you know, first home game. As you mentioned, the fact that the Dooley Field, which is very well deserved, that's going to be a nice situation.
I totally agree. I think it's going to be a great crowd this weekend.
It's going to be a hot one, though.
It's going to be a hot
one.
That
that's
scorcher.
One thing. I saw that. You're going to see some people wait until the last second to come in the stadium, and probably I don't know how long they'll stay.
Well, I'll tell you what, no matter what Willie Taggart tells you, hydrate yourself on Saturday. Just put yourself full of water and you'll be okay.
That's pretty good.
Well, Coach, we don't have the rankings yet, but we can let's roll through what we had last week, but look ahead to this week. Got a couple of marquee matchups in the top six, with Clemson hosting Texas A&M. And Texas at home against LSU. Got a couple of big games here.
Those are really huge games. And you look at the fact that Jimbo Fisher has always had a big rivalry with Clemson, having been the Florida State coach and really kind of holding the upper edge there for a long time. And then the last couple of years that he was at FSU, Clemson kind of changed the table. But it looks to me like Clemson, even though they had a couple of interceptions, looks very fluid offensively, maybe a little better offensively than last year. Defense maybe not quite as good because of the guys they lost up front. But and then A&M, played Texas State. It's hard to get a good beat on them. They had some guys they held out to and had some injuries. But, for them to be a 17.5-point underdog really just kind of shows you the way people feel about Clemson playing at home. But I think they're going to get challenged, Clemson, with Kellen Mond's a good quarterback. It's going to be a test, but you got to feel like that Trevor Lawrence is going to come back huge after having those two interceptions and have a big game. I look for Clemson to win this game. And then the other game is kind of the battle of the contracts, because Tom Herman was supposed to be the LSU coach, and he kind of used that to parlay the Texas job, and then Coach O got the job. And Coach O goes, "Hey, I appreciate it, Tom. I really wanted this job, and I always wanted to be a Tiger, and these Tigers always ready." So that's going to be interesting, the fact that LSU has really developed a pretty potent offensive attack. You know, they hired that guy from the Saints to come in and kind of help them out a little bit with Coach Ensminger as offensive coordinator, and we know what kind of defense they have. Texas lost some pretty good players from last year, particularly on their defensive front. So it's going to be interesting to see. I look for LSU to win that game. They're a favorite at Texas.
They are favored, yeah.
And it's going to be a big game. But I think the one thing Burrow needs to do, except when he played against us, he played pretty well. He never got many stats against the really good teams last year. He got a lot of garbage stats, but I like him as a quarterback. I think he's really grown. I used to know his dad when he coached at Oklahoma, and the kid wasn't even born then, but he's grown up as football junkie for life, and I look for LSU to win that game. So I'm going with Clemson and LSU.
We'll pass on Bama, Georgia, and Oklahoma, as they are about a combined 150-point favorites against New Mexico State, Murray State, and South Dakota.
Oklahoma's playing South Dakota, right?
Yeah, not South Dakota State, South Dakota.
I never will forget when we were playing South Dakota State, their coach came to the game and was wearing shorts. Have you ever seen the head coach wear shorts?
Talking about like those bike shorts
the spandex.
Yeah, the spandex.
I mean, I was up in the press box. I looked and I said, "Is that the head coach?" The Jackrabbits or something like. What are they? The Jackrabbits?
I think that's South Dakota State, isn't it? Or the Jack? South Dakota. Yeah. I mean, South Dakota State's the better of the South Dakotas, right?
North Dakota State's the big. All right, let's go.
All right, how about in the Big Ten? I know Army kind of laid an egg. They won, but they kind of laid an egg. Who's got the trickier game, Ohio State hosting Cincinnati or Michigan hosting Army?
Well, the thing about Army, they're going to keep the ball away from Michigan. You know, they're going to make a lot of first downs. You saw them last year take Oklahoma to overtime. So they really had a kind of a not a very good game last week. I thought they would drub that team, but they ended up winning and actually called 8 passes in the game, which is more than they usually throw counting warm-ups. So I think Army will give Michigan a little bit of a test. But Cincinnati was impressive to me against UCLA. I knew that Cincinnati had a pretty good defense, but their offense has some skilled people. UCLA was a dud team last week. They looked terrible, and you thought they'd make some big strides from year one to year two. So I don't know if they're going to be able to do it. But twice during that game, the quarterback had the ball slip out of his hand.
Yeah.
You know how you go back to throw a pass and wind up, you know, maybe in the snow or something, the ball come out of your hand. But twice, he must have small hands or something. And but I think Ohio State certainly talented and Fields look good, and they'll get challenged by Cincinnati. And there's another in-state game where Cincinnati, these kids, you know, that's a big rivalry for them to have a chance to go into the horseshoe and play. And what's Ohio State, like 17-point favorite or something like that?
16.5 right now.
All right.
Michigan is favored by 23 over Army.
Yeah. Michigan's offense is still a state, you know, coming around. But, you know, both those teams should win. I don't know if either one of them will cover, though.
All right. Let's look at some of the SEC games before we let you go, Coach. All right. Tennessee, horrible last week. BYU, they hung for a while with Utah. Who do you think's the favorite? Of course, it's Tennessee, favored by 3.5.
Well, you know, BYU just has a very – offensively, they're just really challenged. They don't do a whole lot on offense. They got a pretty solid defense. But it's going to be a really tough week up there in Knoxville with everybody on the staff and the players. And I'm interested to see how many people actually show up for the game. You know what I mean? So BYU – a lot better team than Georgia State. Maybe not the offense that Georgia State has. So, but I predict that Tennessee will win next week, though. They play Chattanooga, right?
Well, who knows at this point? That's a good question. By the way, Wyoming beat Missouri this past weekend, so Missouri's hosting West Virginia as a 14.5-point favorite.
You know, West Virginia had a coaching change. Dana Holgorsen went out to Houston for a lot of money, and this Brown guy came up from Troy State, who Neil Brown's a good coach. But West Virginia's talent level, the last couple of years, they haven't recruited well. There's been a lot of talk about Holgorsen leaving, and I talked to some people out in Missouri that I know that say that West Virginia's talent level's down a little bit, but that should be an interesting game because Missouri really needs a W after that tough loss to the Wyoming Cowboys. How about that coach out there? He gets $100,000 anytime he beats a Power 5 team.
Is that right?
And so
he probably
took some people to the rodeo after that game.
No doubt. Let's see. We got a conference. We do have a conference game. Arkansas at Ole Miss.
Well, this is, in my mind, I wait for it every year to talk about it, Logan, and you. This is your first year with me, but this is the complete pillow fight of the week.
This is two teams
that are totally inept on offense last week that have really good offensive coaches, and Coach Rodriguez and Coach Morris, to a certain extent. I wouldn't put him in the same level as the success that Rodriguez has had, who's the grandfather of the spread. I mean, he was the guy that started it up there in West Virginia when he was coaching, and he used to come to our clinics at Marshall and talk about things. I never will forget about it. He had this play on the goal line, which I always used, where you call it sprint right or sprint left based on what the defense would do, and it just had a lot of different kind of variables to it, but it always worked. And he was just a really smart coach, you know. But they don't have a lot of talent. You know, they've been on probation. They've had scholarship reductions. And they just look limited against Memphis the other day. And I think What's the line on this game? Who's the favorite?
Oh, let me go. Let me see here. Arkansas, Ole Miss minus 7. So Ole Miss, a touchdown favorite.
Well, I guess they're doing that because they're at home. But Arkansas is looking down the barrel of if they don't win this game and Ole Miss, whoever wins that game has a chance will at least win one conference game. I don't think either one of them are going to win another one to me based on what I've seen. And I'm not going out on a limb telling you that. I just don't think either one of them are very good.
Coach is pasty pick number one.
That's right.
By the way, you can go see that game for as low as $64.
$64? Anybody pay $64 to see that?
That just means that somebody wants to are the lure of the Grove in a night game.
They playing at night?
Yeah, it's 7:30 kickoff on the network.
Hmm.
I guess when you're the only SEC team of the or matchup of the week, you're going to get the SEC Network primetime. This is before CBS takes over week three, so...
Coach, can Florida State beat Louisiana Monroe by 21 points?
You know, based on the way they played last week in the first half, they could. But the second half, I mean, depends on whether they hydrate or not.
That's going to be a fun quote for the rest of the year.
Logan said that, and I've said it. But if people go online, their coach is talking about that their team needs to hydrate during the week. I mean, you live in Tallahassee, Florida. I remember when we used to coach at Florida State. We used to schedule our practices, yeah. Logan and David, on how long we thought the coaches could make it through practice based on the Parcells would come in there with the weather report, and he'd say, God, he said, we can't go but 15 periods a day. I can't make it. I mean, we'd all talk about, they had these fields that were stacked, you know, three levels, and we had a little bit of a incline between them so you'd have for rain drainage.
Yeah.
And we used to take the players in between, periods, and they would lay over there with ice bags on them. I mean, it's hard to get through practice, man. It was hard down there. So you better practice, plant them around. They got an indoor air conditioning thing now. Use that a little bit, Willie.
You know, before we let you go, Kirby talks about, you know, they put those GPS monitors on the players and stuff. I'd be curious if they put one on Kirby, see how much he
moves. I guarantee
around.
He's going about as fast as anybody, 43. Is he 43 or 42?
I think 43,
yeah. Yeah, his monitor is on G, waiting on O. And he's just a very positive guy, but he also if there's any slack in anybody's butt out there, he figures it out pretty quick. And you know what? Just to explain to everybody, the GPS, they have these little pellets on their shoulder pads and all that are computer oriented, and they've got three people over there monitoring these guys during practice. And if they aren't going the right speed and working, the people come tell the coaches right away. You know, of course, usually the coaches can tell that.
Oh yeah.
But we used to have that hidden camera out there where we would, if a guy was, you better be watching, because better be, you know, really working out hard all the time, because if that hidden camera hit you and you were loafing, you know, we'd be filming the practice, but we'd also have a practice, you know, once in a while you just take one player and watch and see if he is loafing. And if you were loafing when that thing hit you, you would get your, you wouldn't, it didn't yeah. work out very good. First of all, you take a lot of player abuse when they would see it, you know,
sure.
The players would see it, but it's amazing how you use different things. And then the other thing that we used to do in the old days when you were a little bit tougher doing practice and you think is we used to have the late whistle. So, you know, usually you go to the whistle blows, but sometimes you let the whistle go for 10 more seconds. And you can imagine some of the piles we had. It was bad. And that was bad coaching by all of us. We should have never done that. But, you know, go to the whistle blows. But, you know, usually it blows pretty quickly. But you keep on letting it go, and you get some really good contact.
All right, Coach. We're going to wrap it up. We'll see you Friday at the Blind Pig from 6 until 8 for University Tire and Automotive's Bulldog Friday
going
night.
On there. That'll be some good.
Are you still going BLT?
You know, I've been thinking about it. I got a lot of choices down there.
I know.
And I built up a year of almost 9 months of hunger to go to the Blind Pig. So I'm going to come down there. Even though it's not a conference game, I'm going to eat like it's a conference
there
game.
There you go. There you go.
All right,
Coach, we love you. We'll see you Friday. We'll take a quick timeout. We'll be right back to wrap things up here on 960 The Ref.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.